Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2023 Youth Education Conference held in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Okay, so why are you guys in this class? Why'd you choose this class? Okay, it sounds the most interesting.
I followed them.
Oh, and you followed them? Okay, that's a good answer.
I wanted to tell some jokes.
And Bracken wanted to steal my microphone and tell jokes. Okay, well, I'm glad you guys came here. Hopefully this will be an exciting class and it will pique your interest and you'll actually maybe learn something. Okay, so we're studying about heroes and why you need them. Why do you think we need heroes? For someone to look up to. Anything else?
To make the world a better place.
To make the world a better place? Yes?
Heroes help you learn.
Heroes help you learn. And that's what we're going to do today. We're going to study first the hero's journey. Oh, I forgot I had one. So the hero's journey is, how many of you have seen this before? It's in your books. How many of you have seen this? How many of you have had this explained to you before? Okay, for those of you who don't, so a hero goes on a journey and he wanders through these various steps until he gets to the end of his journey. Is that the end? Why do we have the hero's journey? Why have we created this kind of graphic to tell us how a story goes? Okay, before you answer that, how long have we been using this model to tell stories? Since the beginning, since the very beginning of time, man has used the hero's journey to tell a story. And in the story, you start with a hero, an ordinary person who's living their life, just going about their business, and then one day, something happens to them. Something changes their lives forever. And they know that they need to change and make different choices. And they have to decide whether they're going to go on this journey or not. And they have to decide if they go on this journey, what is the goal at the end of the journey? So then they meet a mentor who insists that they will help them and that they need to make this journey and tells them some reasons why they need to make the journey. Then along the path, they find trials and failures and they find helpers. Then they learn new skills from these people. Then they go to the point where of no return, where they think they have completely failed their mission. There's no way that they can accomplish what they set out to do. And then they have a revelation that maybe the way they're looking at the problem needs to be changed, and they come up with some new ideas on how to win. They finally make the changes that they need to become the person that they need to be able to finish the journey. And then they have a moment where everything aligns, or what we call the atonement, where they repent of everything that they've screwed up in the past and they look forward to the future. And then they get the gift that helps them change and helps them accomplish what it is that they have set out to do. And then they return back to their original starting point, but they are no longer the same. They have changed. Something about them has changed. Did you know that there's a heroine's journey as well? Hers is much more complicated. Why do you think that is? Boys are simple, pretty much. But it's also because when men take the journey, they may have one or two people that help them, but usually it's a solo journey. They are proving themselves to themselves. Women, on the other hand, usually take the journey with others. They gather people as they go around their journey, and when they come back, they have not only changed themselves, they've changed the people around them. And so Joseph Campbell says that there really isn't a heroine's journey because she is already there, because she has already accomplished. Now, what do you think that means? Why do you think that women don't have to go through the journey? Nobody knows? Because who is it that goes out and fights the bad guy, fights the dragon? Is it the women? It's the knight. And so he has to prove himself worthy of being able to kill that dragon. So once he's killed that dragon, what happens after that? He marries the princess. And has she been wandering on that journey with him? Where has she been?
Stuck in the tower.
So he has to rescue her from the tower too, doesn't he? But she has been waiting for him to accomplish that journey. What happens to the knight that's going through that journey that makes him suddenly worthy of the damsel that he's rescuing?
The sacrifice.
Now, when the knight goes off to save the damsel, what is his opinion of the damsel that he's going to be rescuing? What does he think about her?
He likes her.
He likes her. And what does he think? Oh, yeah, she's kind of nice, and, you know, if we end up together, that's okay. Is that what he thinks about her?
The prettiest one in all the world.
And is it just the way she looks? Think of the knights of the round table. Why did they go rescue the damsel? What were they? Why did they think she was worth rescuing? Because it wasn't just because she was the prettiest in all the world. What was her character? What was her qualities that the knight saw in her to make her worthy of it? Virtue. Very good. Did you want to say something? Yes, he wants to protect her and keep her safe. So when the knight decides that he's going to protect, where else have we seen that in the scriptures? What part of the scriptures do we have that tells us that the men are supposed to protect? It talks about it in the Book of Mormon. Who's the one that says who's willing to fight? Captain Moroni. Any place else? Yeah, and the Doctrine and Covenants. Would give me an example from the Doctrine and Covenants. Yeah, you answered. Do you want to think a minute? Yeah, okay, the Mormon Battalion is a good example. Abinadi. Anybody else? Absolutely. And you? Proclamation to the world. That's right. And what is the job of a heroine? To be the helpmeet, to encourage him to go on the journey. To what else does she do? What's her primary role?
Help raise and nurture.
So if she goes on that journey with the knight, is she nurturing the family and protecting? No. Men are designed to step in front of a bullet or a dragon because that is their role and they instinctively know that that's how they protect. How does a woman protect? Yes.
Her children.
She totally protects her children. What else does she protect? Their home. And what about all the people she knows?
Yeah, those
around her. So she has a different role. And how, have you ever seen a mama bear go after somebody that's hurting one of their cubs? How many of you times have you seen your mom do that for you? All of you have at one point, haven't you? Okay, both of these journeys represent a journey towards spiritual and social growth. We learn about God, ourselves, and other people on our journey through this mortal life. All of us make this journey. So where do you think you are on your journey? How many of you feel like you've gone through and slayed the dragon or protected something. When did you do that? Are you done with it yet?
No.
Okay. So a lot of times we feel as we are teenagers that we get to this part right here, we're in the eye of the storm, still trying to figure out who we are, what we're doing, and how we're going to get out of this mess we've made of ourselves. And it feels like our journey's over and that we're stuck right there. Have you ever felt that way? That what the circumstances you've gotten into cannot be repaired. You don't have to raise your hands. You can just think about it. So if you know that this is the hero's journey and this is the journey that you yourself are going, what do you need to do to get yourself out of this? If you can't read that, look on your handout and you look at the steps. What's the next step after you're in this depth of despair, in the eye of the storm? That's one thing. Well, if you look on the heroine's journey, it's seeking spirituality. You have to develop your spirituality in order to be able to slay, move out of that depth of despair to be able to move forward. Anything else? So where is your mentor in this? You picked up a mentor at the top. Where's your mentor when you've gotten yourself into this mess?
Parents.
Yeah, so who are mentors? They're your parents? The prophet, the teachers. How about friends? Can your friends be your mentors? What about people in the scriptures? Do you know them? You know their stories. Why do you think we have the scriptures? If we need hero stories in our lives to be able to understand how to live our lives and battle the adversaries that we face, then why would you think the scriptures would not have those helps in them as well? That's why we have the scriptures. Okay, so let's see. So who's ever seen this before? So what is it? Yin and yang. What does it mean?
Balance.
Balance? But what are the two parts that have to be balanced? Yes. Okay, where there's light, there. Yes. So always there's a mix of light and dark. But you can have that moment where there is no dark. Who gives us that light?
God.
But how can you feel it? The Holy Ghost. Absolutely. The Holy Ghost allows you to feel that, and it helps you to clear out the darkness. So what happens when you're bound up in darkness and you don't see any light? What can you do?
You can pray, you can turn towards the scriptures, you can go to church, you can do that.
Very good. So is there anything that you've done that is so bad that you can't find the light? No. Does it feel like you can't find the light? Yes, but this whole journey, this whole hero's journey, is to be able to discern what is darkness and what is light, and how to figure out which is which, and how to keep the dark out and let the light in. So by the time the hero and the heroine return from their journeys, they've figured that out. And sometimes we have to go through this hero's journey several times in our lives because our circumstances change. Going through this journey when you're a teenager is different than when you're an adult or when you're doing it with your children or in your old age, all the challenges we face. Every bad thing that we think happens to us is part of our journey. And if we can look at it that way, instead of looking at it that it's the worst thing that's ever happened to us, then we can separate the light from the dark. Okay, now I'm going to turn the time over to Jacob, who's going to talk about movies.
All right. So she did not inform me when she told me that I would be teaching that this was supposed to be spiritual. So, okay. Well, so first off, it shows three different movies here. It shows Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, and Spider-Man. I'm going to be focusing on Spider-Man because he's Spider-Man. But my qualifications for teaching this nerdism stuff. First off, I have my cufflinks are the White Tree of Gondor, so that's one thing. And I'm wearing a bow tie, which is the nerdiest thing you can possibly wear. So I'm set. So who here are fans of Spider-Man? All right. Who here are fans of Superman? Okay, good. Not a ton of you, because I'm going to razz on him. So in my opinion, I think Spider-Man is the quintessential and best modern hero that we have. He's the best written and the best constructed. Yes. Just the character in general. Although my favorite is Andrew Garfield. He is the quintessential construct of a basically the perfect hero for our time. And comparing that to Superman, Superman is a definite product of his time, and there's certainly a lot to learn from him. But let's go through the reasons why I think Spider-Man is better. So, for one, just general nerdy knowledge about the two of them. Superman is an alien from outer space, duh, and he is virtually invincible. I'm going down the basics. Don't get into the details because it gets complicated. But he's virtually invincible unless exposed to a very specific type of rock from a dead planet that no longer exists. Yes. Yeah, apparently. But the basics of the character, which means that he very rarely has the opportunity to fail or has the opportunity to personally get hurt, which personally I think is a problem. Spider-Man, on the other hand, he is a regular kid from Queens, a regular high school kid from Queens who is awkward, nerdy, has no friends, and has a crush on a girl, which all guys can relate to. He is randomly, just out of the blue, bitten by a radioactive spider and gains the powers of a spider somehow. And he's able to climb walls and shoot webs, and we all know the thing. But deep down in his heart, he is just a regular guy. And the best part about him is he's not invincible. He can get hurt, and he does get hurt. If you've seen that movie that the poster's from, the end, he gets beat to crap. But he still gets up and keeps fighting, and that is why he, personally to me, is a better hero for our time. Superman, when he was written and constructed, it was during a lot of patriotic time for America. And so he was constructed to be the ideal of this is America, and he's, you know, American, you know, ingenuity and strength and all that, which is great for the time. Nowadays, we have a lot more realistic of a view. And so Spider-Man is made more for that time. Granted, he's made during 60s, 70s, correct me on that if I'm wrong. But he was still moving into an era of confusion and a lot of depressed kids. And so he's a great ideal, as was brought up in the beginning. Heroes are someone to look up to, right? They're an ideal, something to strive for. And personally, I think it's better to strive for Spider-Man than strive for Superman, because Superman is perfect, and you can't get that high. Like, if a kid looks at Superman and he's this invincible alien that can't be hurt, the kid's like, well, I can't do that. And then he doesn't even try. But Spider-Man, he's, like I said, a regular kid, just like you and me. He goes through the same trials, the same tribulations. He gets beat up. He gets bullied. He loses people. He experiences loss and grief. But in the end, he always puts that mask back on, goes back into the streets, and keeps fighting, which is a much better... It's more realistic for a kid. If you're a kid reading a comic book or watching a movie, you see a regular guy who can do amazing things, which is better than an amazing guy who can do amazing things. So it's a more realistic expectation for the kid, and the kid feels like he can actually get there. It's like, you know, I could be Spider-Man. Yeah, I can totally be Spider-Man. And to that point, I know so many people and so many kids who want to be Spider-Man. Like, who here wants to be Spider-Man? Right? Right? I have never once met a person who wants to be Superman. They can like Superman. They can think he's a cool character. They think his powers are cool and his bad guys are cool. That's awesome. But they never want to be Superman. Who wants to be Superman? Pfft, that sounds boring. But Spider-Man, that's sick. Another great thing about Spider-Man to look up to him is he doesn't just fight his villains. He doesn't just beat them and take them to jail and, yeah, I'm better than you. I'm the greater good. What he does is he tries to save his villains. All of his villains are constructed in a way to be sympathetic, to have a backstory that allows for them to be redeemed. There is a possibility for redemption for all of his villains, or at least his most popular ones. And so every time he fights them, he doesn't just fight them. He also tries to redeem them. And sometimes he succeeds and sometimes he fails. In his first movie of the Raimi trilogy, spoiler alert, he tries to save Green Goblin, Norman Osborn, and fails in the end. Norman Osborn dies, and it's really sad. And then in the second movie, he fights Doc Ock, which was his mentor. He looked up to this guy, and then just the guy made mistakes, and he went down a dark path and was seduced by power. But he still tries to help him, and he still, in the end, ends up redeeming him, and Doc Ock sacrifices, again, spoiler alert, Doc Ock sacrifices himself to save the city, and he ends up redeeming his villain. He also learns lessons every time he fights someone. He learns about the world and human beings, and he goes through different trials every time. Like, in the third movie, again, spoiler alert, he learns to forgive the man who killed Uncle Ben, which is a great lesson to teach kids. Like, he's the greatest avatar for lessons to young kids, because young kids look up to him, so he's idolized by kids, and so he's a great vessel for teaching kids these great morals and things. I think I just ran out of things to say. So let's move on to Star Wars. Actually, no, let's move on to Lord of the Rings. Because here's the thing about Lord of the Rings. Frodo is the protagonist, but who's the hero? Not quite. He can be considered... Basically, the whole Fellowship are heroes in their own right. But the one I'm looking for... Yes. Sam is the real hero of the story. And actually, I can relate this to spiritual stuff. In the writer of this, J.R.R. Tolkien, was a Christian, a devout Christian. And the whole story of the Lord of the Rings is based off of the plan of salvation. And without getting into all of the characters and what they represent, Sam represents Jesus. He will go through everything with us, and he will be there with us even when we don't want him there. Because Frodo tried to get away from Sam. He's like, all right, I'm going on my own. And Sam was like heck you are. And he went with him, and he stuck with him, and he is the real hero. But he also was just a gardener, a halfling gardener. But he ends up doing these amazing things. He takes out a whole outpost full of orcs with a trowel and a frying pan. Like, he's another ultimate hero. And in the end, he saves Frodo. And he's the one who saves Middle-earth. Because he's the one that gets Frodo to the top of that mountain. And I guess technically Gollum took the ring into the lava. But Sam got him there. And so, again, Sam is another great ordinary hero that people can look up to and is a realistic expectation. Now, Star Wars. So, Luke Skywalker is just a regular farm boy. Just a regular guy hiding out on a desert planet, nothing to do, just big rock, whining about going to Tashi Station to pick up... I cannot talk. Tashi Station to pick up some power converters and just whining about it all day. But then, and this is a perfect... Star Wars is a perfect example of the hero's journey. The perfect quintessential example of the hero's journey. Because the droids, R2-D2 and C-3PO, fall right into his lap, and that is the call to adventure. He finds the plans, and he finds out that they need to go find Obi-Wan, apparently relates help me Obi-Wan to Ben. Don't know how those connect, but whatever. And he figures it out, and he takes them to Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan asks him, hey, you want to come with me? You want to go fight the Empire? And at first, he's like, not really. Because it's the Empire. They own the galaxy, you know? They're the big bad in the white suits and the big black suits as well. They got the... Their color department sucks. But then, in the end, he's just like, I can take you as far as Anchorhead or wherever you're going or whatever, and I can kind of come with you a little bit of the way. But fighting the Empire, we'll see about that. But then he gets roped up into this bigger issue and this bigger thing when his aunt and uncle get killed by the Empire, and he has nowhere else to go, and he basically just gets forced into it. But he rises to the challenge, and he learns to grow and eventually becomes this great Jedi Master, but he still started on a moisture farm, like collecting water in a desert. I don't even know how that works. Once again, great example of the hero's journey, but... That's all I've got for you. So I'm going to turn the time back over to my mom.
So now that we've had the fun with the movies, let's move on to the boring stuff. The books. Okay. Aren't these great books? These are great stories. So we're talking about The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe and Cinderella. I mean, not Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty. So this is the heroine's journey. And this is whose journey? Actually a little bit of both, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because Susan has her journey, and she has her journey, and he has his journey. They all four of them have their journeys. That's right. I only remembered Susan's. Sorry. So let's go through this. So C.S. Lewis was friends with Tolkien. And they actually wrote their books at the same time. And they both were writing about the same topic. What was the same topic? Plan of Salvation. They were Christians and they wanted... And actually, C.S. Lewis had grown up as an atheist and been an atheist for a very long time. And then once he converted and realized that he really was a religious man, he decided that he wanted to write a story that would encourage others to learn about Christ and to understand the plan of salvation. And Tolkien wanted to do the same thing, and so they actually swapped their manuscripts with each other and would compare notes, and they helped each other write these books. So they have similar themes to their books, which is pretty interesting. Okay, so how do they end up on their journey in the beginning? What starts the journey?
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek. So it's ordinary kids just playing around. Were they good kids? Were they kind of good kids, ordinary kids, kind of, yeah. And did they have some issues with each other?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was what set them, once they got through the door, where did they end up? In Narnia. Was it the same as the world that they had just left? It was snowing. So that part of the hero's journey, they've gotten themselves into a brand new world. So did they just figure, okay, we're just going to go back out the door and back into our own life? Why couldn't they do that?
It disappeared.
And how are they going to find it?
They didn't.
Oh, wait. They have to go on a journey. They have to go find it. So they had to go on this journey to be able to rescue their brother. So that only took like 15 minutes, right? Yeah, it took 5 minutes. So they so on this journey, since we don't have time to talk about the entire book, on this journey, how did they get, what was the final thing that allowed them to get back to Narnia with their brother? So Aslan sacrifices himself. Did they expect that to happen? No. So who does Aslan represent? That's right. So once he sacrifices his life, what allows them to go back? Well, how does this journey end? Because when you come back to the beginning. They can see the lamppost again. Okay, but then there's a whole other series of books that go with it. So the journey doesn't quite end. But the first book lays that foundation, doesn't it? Okay, so let's go on to Sleeping Beauty. This is the heroine's journey. Now, what's the very first thing when she's born that happens?
Was Sleeping Beauty on heroin?
No. Yes. Yes. So what happens when they do the blessings? She's getting all these good blessings and everybody's saying these wonderful things about her. What happens? She gets cursed.
She gets a death curse.
So the world was looking all bright and beautiful and safe, and then all of a sudden, it's not a safe place anymore, is it? So what do her parents do about that? They put away all the spinning wheels. Why? Yes. Yes, they are trying to protect her from the curse. What else do? They don't just throw away the spinning wheels. What else do? They hid her in the woods so that no one would know who she was, so that she could the curse could not happen. Did it work? What happened when she got old enough to realize that there was a world outside the one that she was living in? She met a man. That's right. She met a man, and suddenly her world kind of opens up a little bit. And what does he think when he meets her? So then we have a combining of what? The heroine journey and the hero. They're both tied together now. So he wants to rescue her. So how does she end up finding the spinning wheel and invoking the curse? She goes back home. So she leaves the safe place where her parents have put her to experience the world. And what happens? She finds the spinning wheel and the curse happens anyway. So then what happens? How does the prince find her? Yes. So her mentors go find him and tell him what? She's fallen under the curse. You got to come save her. You got to come save her. You're the only one that can do it. Isn't that how the hero's journey starts? You have to go rescue. Yep, you have to go have your adventure. Okay, so he goes and has his adventure. What kind of things does he meet that keep him from being able to rescue her? dragons, goblins, thorny bushes, everything that you can think of gets thrown in his path. What does he do? Does he give up? No. Why doesn't he give up? Because what? Because he loves her. So he's willing to do whatever. He's willing to sacrifice himself to save her, right? So what's the happy ending? Anybody know? The kiss. That's right. He finds her, but she's asleep. So what does he have to do? That's right. He has to kiss her, of course. He can't just shake her on the shoulder and wake her up. That would kind of ruin the story. Kind of. Yes. Okay, so do they live happily ever after that? Yeah, they do. So that is an example of the heroine's journey. Now, on your handouts, I gave you a list of books and movies that have the heroine's journey and the hero's journey. And you can watch those. And I recommend that you go and home and watch those and see not only what the hero's journey is and map it through the story, but also see how, like Jake did with Spider-Man and with Lord of the Rings, see how that applies to real life. See how that journey can affect you and encourage you in your journey. Okay, so study the hero's journey to see where you are in your life. And then read bios of people you admire. When I was a teenager, I was insatiable in reading about people. I wanted to know what made them make the decisions in their life that they made, and how did they overcome their hardships, and how did they make the decisions that got them to where they became famous people. There's two that really stand out that have always been my heroines. One is Madame Curie, because of the way that she was a mother to her children, even though she was a scientist, and she was able to balance both of those. That really impressed me, because she felt like she had a mission to accomplish a specific thing, but at the same time, she wanted to be a mom, and she was able to do both of them. And the other one was Clara Barton. And she was the person who started nursing, and she was the one who influenced Florence Nightingale and Clara Barton worked together to create the Red Cross and to start nursing during wars and other calamities where people needed help. And to me, to be able to see a need and be able to see a problem that was in the world and think of a solution and work with others to create that, not just in your own little world, but worldwide, was really inspiring to me. So go find people that you that you admire, that you want to know how they got to that point, and look in their lives, in their bios, read their hero's journeys. And also, I've studied all of the lives of all the prophets, and you can find the hero's journey in their lives as well, the things they struggled with. They didn't grow up to want to be the prophet. That was not their aspiration. And a lot of times they had to give up a lot to be able to follow the path that the Lord wanted instead of following the path that they wanted. So it's interesting to read those kind of stories and see what are you willing to sacrifice to be able to achieve the things that Heavenly Father wants you to do. You also want to look at what people did that messed up their lives. Sometimes we get on the hero's journey and we start going along and we think we're doing it all right, and we get in the middle of that downward part and we've done things that have made it seem like it's impossible for us to move forward. But if we can look at the ways that other people have reached out to mentors, or how they what happened when they hit rock bottom, what did they do to get themselves to rock bottom, and or if they were heading there and they decided they didn't want to be at rock bottom, what did they do? And then as you read the classics and other books and watch, there isn't a story out there, unless it's a broken book, that doesn't have the hero's journey in it somewhere. Broken books break the hero's journey, and it doesn't end the way that you expect it to, and that's why it's broken. And so as you Sometimes it's good to read the broken books, because the broken books show you the really bad things that can happen when you step off the path that you should be on. But I recommend that you stick to the more helpful books. And then as you read the hero's journey, you really see the need to have a mentor in your life. All of these people have had mentors, whether the people who were their mentors knew they were their mentors or not. And that helps you find your way through your journey when you're reaching places in your life where you feel like you don't know what to do next. And then also, as I've said before, look for the hero's journey in the scripture stories. The scriptures are given to us so that we can figure out how to handle this world. We are in a hero's journey as we move through this mortal life. And the scriptures were given to us as a guidepost and a map of what we can do to help us through our journey and find our way back. And the way back is back to Christ. And with that, I leave that with you, and that is the end of my class. Thank you so much.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.